Hey guys, did you know that you can subscribe to the Investor Coaching Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts? When you subscribe, you get notifications with new episodes so you never have to go looking for an episode or worry about what you've missed. So if you're on your phone or computer, go ahead and pause the episode real quick and become a subscriber. If you're not sure how to subscribe, go to paulwinkler.com/how-to-subscribe, all one word, how to subscribe, for instructions, or click the link in the show note. Now let's get started.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show. Talking about the world of money and investing. And answering questions as well about that particular topic. Where you ask a question, paulwinkler.com/question. Now, I hearing an awful lot, of course, as from time to time this happens, you hear people asking about, hey, you know, are we concerned about major financial market crashes? Are we concerned that one is going to happen? Of course, we've had a few of them in recent memory for a lot of people. That memory has been a little bit too recent. 2008, of course, was the last really big one. 2002 was no slouch either. You know, the 02 one was more due to just really a just lack of diversification for most people. They didn't have full, and that's what we're seeing a lot now. We're seeing people not terribly well diversified, you know, and they think they are because they own funds that are called total market funds or, you know, target date funds, and they're supposed to be allocating it for me and all of that, but not necessarily the case, not necessarily terribly well diversified. Matter of fact, there was an article about that very topic. It was somebody who was writing about a Vanguard actually lowering their fees on target date funds. And so what does that mean for investors? And all I could think is, well, they have a non-diversified portfolio managing the cheapest area of the market to manage that costs even less than it did before. And that's about all it means. So it doesn't mean a whole lot. But, you know, that's the industry for you. Make you think you're really getting something good. But, you know, that's the general issue is people worry about that. Of course, we had, you know, 2020, you know, who can forget that, you know, March of last year. I was looking at some videos that I had done, just going through my website and trying to rearrange the website. And one of the things that I had seen was a video I'd done. It was glass half empty or glass half full was the headline of the video. And I went back to just, I wonder what I was saying, because it was literally at the market bottom when the market had just really tanked late March of 2020. And, you know, there I am talking about the various things that could go right, because nobody's talking about what could go right. All you heard was, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be nasty. And I'm talking during this video about various treatments for COVID that were out there, that were possibly out there. I was talking about pricing of stocks, as I often do, compared to their book values, and how, you know, my over 30 years of being in this business, I had never seen prices that low. I mean, it was literally these prices on different areas of the market. You know, in international stocks I was talking about in the video were at like 50 cents to the dollar on book value. And just unbelievably low. So, you know, that was at that point in time, though, everybody's like, oh, my goodness, we don't know what to expect. And that is, in general, always what you want to think about in terms of stock markets. You don't know what to expect. You know, markets will price stuff based on what is expected. And, you know, somebody was asking me about this week, says, you know, are you concerned we might have a major financial crash and lose everything? And my general answer to that is, if you really diversify properly, I mean, when I talk about diversification, I'm talking about you own some of the big companies, you know, the ones that the mutual fund companies are really enamored with, you know, simply because it's a cheap area of the market to manage. you do own some of that stuff, but you also want to own some of the value companies whose price is already low compared to their assets. And therefore, you know, even if you look back through history, it's really interesting. This surprised me when I actually saw it. It was one of my designations that I had gone through, and they talked about this, a wealth management certified professional designation. And they talked about how value companies, a lot of times during really big market downturns, don't go down as much if they go down at all. I mean, 2000, they actually went up. 2002, they actually went up. Or 2001, excuse me, they actually went up. But they don't actually go down. And the reason they don't go down much as much is because they don't have as far to fall. Or maybe the economy shifts to the, where that area of the market, those segments of the market that are represented by those value companies, is not necessarily going to be, that those areas aren't going to necessarily be affected by whatever's happening. And the thing that happens with those companies, which makes that surprising, is that these companies tend to be distressed companies. And you think distressed companies, the economy starts to get a bit soft. Those should fall further, you would think, and not necessarily the case. So, number one, you look at these diversification platforms and the way you actually go and put some of those money in the value companies, some of the money in small companies, some of the company money is going into small value. You may look at things that are causing the market downturn, for example. There may be things that are likely to cause problems in the economy that don't affect countries equally. So you'll have one country may benefit from what's going on, or several countries may benefit from what's going on. It may be the drop in the value of your currency, in this case, the dollar. If the dollar drops in value, it takes more dollars, because the dollar has dropped in value, it takes more of them to purchase something that is going to be in a different currency. Because when we say the dollar drops in value, we're talking about it dropping versus another currency out there. So it will take more of our dollars to buy that currency. And anytime you're buying something outside the country, you're going to be converting to that country's currency, whether it be the yen, the euro, or whatever. And if the dollar dropped in value, it takes more of those to buy it. Well, if you think of it, if it takes more of it and your investment portfolio is valued in dollars, then that international thing goes up in value relatively, even if it didn't necessarily go up. It goes up because you're looking at it in terms of dollars. It appears to go up, you see. So hence, that's another thing you've got going for you there. Then you get into emerging market countries. You get into different countries that are smaller and maybe they're more dynamic than the American economy. Maybe they don't have the demographic issues that we have. For example, when we look at demographic issues, the aging of the population can have a negative impact on economics and growth and those types of things. And even when you have an aging population, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Simply, you might have fewer people, but you're looking at different markets that you can sell things into that don't necessarily have that. You know, hence, you're looking for economies that may not be necessarily negatively impacted by what's going on in your country. But the other thing, the big thing is this, you know, the bond portfolios. Now, this is why bonds tend to be so important for the investor, is that you want your really short-term bonds. They're going to be impervious to anything. Doesn't matter what happens. Doesn't matter if interest rates fluctuate wildly. Those bonds will be stable in value. Now, you're going to get some two-year bonds. Two-year bonds are going to be mildly impacted by interest rate swings, because a two-year bond is where you lend money for 2 years. And you think about it, you're going to get your money back. The bond maturity is going to be a very short period of time out, and therefore you're going to get your money back. And when you get your money back, it's such a short period of time that any interest rate swings, because you're going to be reinvesting the money when the bond matures into something else. So its swing in value due to interest rate changes is very minimal. Then 3-year bonds, that's going to be a little bit more. Then 4-year bonds, then you'll have some 5-year bonds. Now, you typically tend to, when you put together a portfolio, I tend to focus a little bit less on the really long maturity stuff, because that interest rate risk, that interest rate risk. If interest rates go up, those bonds can go down. And that can also drive the stock market down temporarily because companies borrow money, cost of doing business has increased. Possibly people don't buy as much stuff when interest rates increase because a lot of times, like it or not, people buy things on credit. So in essence, what we got to do is make sure that we don't have too much out there in that area. But where they shine is that when you have big market declines and all of a sudden now there is a drive to lower interest rates around the world for just to try to stimulate the economy, those bonds can actually shoot up in value. So you want a little bit of both of those types of things. So your bonds are there to move the opposite direction. So I don't worry about losing everything because you think about it. For me to lose everything, when I own a company, that company owns real estate. They own, equipment. They have inventories. And whatever they happen to sell, they've got an inventory in whatever they sell. So in effect, for me to lose everything, that would mean that every company around the world that I have in my portfolio, which I mean, personally, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 15 to 20,000 companies, every one of those companies would simultaneously have to go bankrupt and have no value left over. Their land would have to be worth nothing. So for that to happen, that would be, we probably have bigger problems on our hand if that actually happens. So we look at that and say, okay, big market downturn. And market downturns, you've heard me say this before, possibly, that they don't typically last all that long in historical terms. Since like 1946, average amount of time before the market recovers back to its previous point was about 111 days. That means sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter. Average, it's going to be some longer, some shorter, but average about 111 days, not forever. But how many times do markets go down in a given year? If you look at 5% downturns, it's about, three times a year. On average, 5% downturns. You look at that and go, wow, that's a lot of times we see downturns that are of that magnitude. 10% downturns once a year. And you look at, if you look at 20% downturns, it's about every 6 years. So, when we want 20%, you think about it, you got $100,000 portfolio is down $20,000. You got $1 million portfolio down $200,000 every 6 years, whether you like it or not. Really, really big downturns, like the Great Depression. And then, you got 73, 74, and then, about every 40 years or something like that. It's just, huge, huge downturns, but they're going to happen. And you just don't know when they're going to happen. And what makes them go down is an important thing, is this brand new news. So if you're saying, hey, are we going to have a big downturn? I don't know. Nobody really knows. You'll have people that act like they know. You'll have people out there saying, I think because of what's going on with, in Europe right now and what's going on with COVID and this is what's going to happen. You'll have people that have opinions. And they're throwing junk out there because if they throw something against the wall and it sticks, they're famous for a long time. So it's worth the risk of being wrong. Because here's the thing, is the media, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but when somebody is wrong, rarely do they ever hold their feet to the fire. They want the guest to come back and talk about what their next prediction is. Now, they may give lip service. You kind of missed this one a little bit. And then the person, this happened, didn't expect that, and blah, blah, blah. And they'll have some reason that they missed and they blew it. But in general, you don't get a whole lot of, you don't get a whole lot of pushback when they're wrong. It really gets down to it. So one of the things that you do with your investments is that you really base it on when I'm going to need the money back. Time horizon is a big deal. And if I'm out there, 20, 30 years, I'm not going to be using this money. I'm not going to be living off of it. Your time horizon is very long. Who cares about market downturns? 111 days, even if it's 3 years, for the market to recover from the downturn, or 5 years or 6 years, you look back at the Depression, you had 1929 and took it to, 1938. For it to actually completely come back, and then, the World War II and all of that, and you had a little bit of a dip and then came back up. You look at that and go, big deal. I've got a long time. I don't worry about that. And if you're older, you're getting closer, you're starting to add those bonds in because they tend to mitigate some of that risk. And you're adding some of that back in so that you don't have to have the full weight of the market downturn on your shoulders. And then when you're right at retirement, you know, might have 40 to 50% of your portfolio sitting in bonds. That's someplace you can pull money from, you can pull income from to buy you time for the stock market to come back. And, you know, you look at it and you say, wow, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next. And I always say that you never know what's going to happen next. It's always brand new news. Stock prices are reflected in, if you actually look at how they're set, it's the present value of all of the future earnings of the company. So you have quite a job on your hands trying to figure out what all those profit streams are going to be for the company going forward out in the future. You know, so you're looking at this terrible task that investors have to figuring out what proper pricing is, and nobody really knows, but everybody votes as to what they think is going to happen next, and that's what pricing comes in at, and there's new news coming out every single day that is setting that price. Now, when the news comes out, it may be something terrible. And then 2 weeks later, you go, oh, it's not nearly as bad as we thought it was going to be. And if you're one of those people that sold out, you're sunk. You're sunk because you sold out. You sold to somebody else that took the risk off of your hands. And that is why so many times we see and we look at investor returns and the results that they get with their investments, and they're so abysmally poor. And it's because the investment advisors, the investment community gets fooled by it as well. It's very easy because you're worried about losing a client to go and say, oh, you know, don't worry, Mrs. Jones, I'll go and put more of your money in this over here. We've done that. And you don't realize that they went and sold after the fact, after it went down, and then they bought the bonds, and then the stocks come back, and then you're sunk. You lost it. You missed out on the upturn. And as I've often said, if you look back through history, again, 2.2 days since 1960s, 1963 to be exact, till now, 2.2 days out of every year give us 100% of the return of stocks historically. It's just unreal. So, you know, market downturns, big crashes, and those types of things, I have no idea. Now, on the other hand, for those that are sitting around waiting for a market crash to go and invest, you don't want to do that either. You know, studies show that people lose more money waiting for a downturn where they can rebuy at a lower price than they ever would if they just went in and, you know, took some of the market downturns in stride. So you don't want to do that either. I mean, it's literally both of those things are what are called tactical asset allocation. It is a form of market timing, and it doesn't work. We know it because why? Because investors are stupid? No, it's because they're so well-informed. Generally, investors are so well-informed. The people that are buying and selling your stocks on a day-to-day basis, they do nothing but trade in that particular company. If they're a market maker for Coca-Cola, that's what they do all day long. They buy Coca-Cola and they don't want to buy and sell it. They don't want to pay too much for it when they buy it. They don't want to sell it for too little. So perish the thought to try to get some inkling as to when markets are going to go down. Just make sure your asset mix and your time horizon, if you're in retirement, you know, you might be 50 to 60% stocks and that's it. And then the rest of it in fixed income. You don't try to be a hero. You make sure the time horizon matches what your time horizon is for taking an income, and your portfolio mix matches that. And that's the idea. That's the best you can do. But try to figure it out. Yeah, you can't. You know, because the reality of it is it'll be something totally out of the blue that causes markets to go down. That's the way they work. It's usually not you're sitting there looking at one thing and going, boy, I'm really watching interest rate, or I'm really watching the inflation rate to see, you know, how that's going to affect stocks and what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden it's COVID that knocks the stock market down. No way to know. And, you know, the reality of it is we can't know because it's based on unpredictable and unknowable news. So, you know, one of my most popular videos out there, we were looking at this week, it was on Facebook. We actually had this video, and it was on, I'm too old for this. It was people worrying about anticipating stock market downturns. And it was a video I did a while back, a little while back, and had like 54,000 views. So a lot of people do worry about that as I get older. I don't have time for this. I don't have time to recover from a market downturn. And I walk through every market downturn through history and how long it took to recover and what actually caused the downturn and how different the things were, the different the events were. And, that's something you can go out on. You can go out on the internet and check that out. I think it's even on my website, paulwinkler.com. So anyway, thanks for the question. And if you got a question, paulwinkler.com/question. That's how you ask questions for the radio show. All right. Let's change gears now. I don't know, did you see that the Social Security inflation rate? Inflation increased the benefit by 6% next year. 6%. That is the biggest since 1983. That just blows my mind. But it's based on the labor inflation rate. And when you have these jumps in inflation, that has an impact. So, people that don't have pensions that have cost of living increases, that doesn't help them at all. But if you got a cost of living increase in your pension, high inflation is going to cause that benefit to go up and you're not hurt as much as a person that happens to have a pension that's not. It's not indexed for inflation. Well, Social Security, of course, is indexed for inflation, and they use labor instead of the CPI, Consumer Price Index. It's a basket of goods that is chosen, and there are a lot of little changes that take place in that and how they handle it, because you have new technology may actually change the price of things or how things increase in price. And the reality of it is that, sometimes life gets better because of new technology. So what happens is they actually adjust the inflation rate for that. Now, with the CPI, it's a basket of goods that may or may not represent what you actually buy. Maybe things in there that have nothing to do with your typical purchasing pattern, but they try to figure out what the typical purchasing pattern is of the average American, and they do that. Now, there are different types of consumer price indexes that are based on, let's say, elderly buying habits and their purchasing patterns. And they've been talking about maybe changing the Social Security to that, or doing something different as far as how they determine the inflation rate. Right now, they've been using labor. Well, because if you look at labor costs, they're going to change at a different rate. And historically, we've actually seen labor inflation be a little bit higher than regular inflation, the regular CPI. And that bodes well for standard of living. Because if you think about it, if people's wages go up faster than the cost of goods and services, that means they can buy more, their money goes further. And you won't hear that in political circles because it doesn't sell well if they're trying to do something in Washington. But a lot of times you'll hear that stuff demagogued. But the inflation rate on Social Security going up, for a lot of people that are on Social Security and they got a big part of their money that comes from that, they're probably happy to see that type of thing. Well, right now what's happening is that, and there was a couple articles about this. Wall Street Journal had an article, Powell says Fed faces difficult trade-off, inflation doesn't moderate. What are we going to do if inflation doesn't moderate? And another one was Powell says factors pushing inflation higher could last till next summer. Well, this is something that I've been talking about in regards to inflation being transitory. And, they said in the article it's been kind of a running joke on Wall Street because it's so vague. What does that mean? What is transitory? Well, transitory typically means that not going to last forever. The consumer price inflation was running at 5.3% in August, which is above the Fed's target of 2%. That's what they're shooting for, is a 2% inflation rate. By personal consumption expenditure, you don't want it too hot and you don't want it too slow. You don't want deflation, because if you have deflation where prices are going down, then people will put off purchases till something's going to be cheaper. And if you got hyperinflation, then what happens? People get really panicked and they don't know what to expect. And it just gets very uncomfortable when you're dealing with not knowing what your money's going to be worth and how much prices are going to go up, and that can be a real challenge. So they try to keep it at a moderate level. 2% has been their goal. They've been talking for years of letting it slide above that 2% range. I've been hearing that for a long time. You know, let that happen. You know, it's okay if it does happen, because what people will do is they'll buy stuff sooner if they think the price is going to go up. And that drives the economy forward. And if you drive the economy forward, that increases tax revenue. And you know, the other thing that happens is if you're looking at interest rates, that can be problematic. You know, so if you have gone and lent money to the federal government for long, long periods of time, I mean, think insurance companies lending money and buying long, long-term government bonds. And if you have a life insurance policy or an annuity, this is you. You know, you've lent money for a long period of time. Those interest rates are going to be based on longer term data. And all of a sudden you have lots of inflation. Well, your money is depreciating in value even faster because, you know, those bonds can be a long time before they mature. And then they're refinanced at the new higher interest rate. So that can be a real problem. That's why in Japan, they basically kept voting in politicians that were anti-inflationary. You know, because they were on fixed incomes, they were on pensions, and pensions, you know, can be a problem if you don't have your pension going up in value based on the need for more money because purchasing power has decreased. You know, the dollar keeps dropping in value, and I'm getting the same number of dollars coming in the door. That's a problem. You know, so basically Powell said in response, he says that the economy is experiencing a very unusual event of supply side restrictions. And that is in essence what I've been talking about. It's, you know, I was interviewed a couple of weeks ago on WTN, and they were saying, hey, you know, what do you think? The guy was asking me, what do you think about the supply side issues or the, you know, the if you're trying to get, let's say products out of Europe and the supply chains, what do you think about that? Is that real? And I said, yeah, it's real. That's what's going on. You know, what's happening is that we're having all kinds of problems trying to get things put together and getting things out of ports, and you know, ports are backed up, and there's all kinds of issues that have caused the only way that you can drive down people's demand for goods is raise prices. Or if it's costing you more money to get goods to them, you know, to try to rush goods to them or get things out of those ports or get those things produced in other places. And it might be more expensive to have somebody else actually produce the product you need to finish your product that you make. You know, maybe that you need parts for something that you're making. And the only way you can do that is go to the higher bidder as far as different contractors that make that part or do that service that you need. And you've got to pass that on. You can't take it on the chin. You're going to have to raise the prices for that. You know, so there are all kinds of issues with that. You know, if you have higher fuel costs and you're not just going to take that on the chin, you're going to pass those fuel costs on. If you have, let's say, higher labor costs because you're having to pay more overtime for people, because a lot of people are just deciding not to work, and you're having to work people longer hours, but you don't want to necessarily hire somebody permanently, you know, you're going to have to pay overtime, and that's going to cost more, you know, because you actually pay a higher wage, right? So, you know, it's all that, and that's really what they're looking at, is going, you know, how long are the supply chains going to be messed up? How long are these issues going to be happening? You know, you had some issues with, you know, weather-related issues with in terms of energy and those types of things. So, all things, it could be next summer. I mean, that's literally what they're saying in here. You know, we expect these things are going to abate, he says, and the lesson, and over time, inflation's going to come back down. Exactly when is impossible to say. I mean, you got to be able to predict the future. You got to be able to predict when some of these issues are going to abate, and there's just no way to predict that type of thing. But, you know, here's the thing about owning, and this is why inflation, good grief, for me, owning stocks is so important, is what are these companies doing? What's the lesson here? The lesson is that companies are raising their prices. That's what they're doing. That's what inflation is. They're raising their prices because they've got to make a profit. So hence, when I own the company, I'm owning the entity that's raising prices, and that helps protect me. Now, in the short run, you may have downturns in stock prices. You know, because nobody wants to raise the price faster than their competitors do. So they may take it on the chin a little bit as far as profits in the short run. But eventually they raise the profits or the prices as much as they need to make a profit that's reasonable for whatever it is that they're doing or whatever they're producing. And, you know, the reality of it is if you don't raise your prices, if you just don't do it, you're out of business. So, you know, somebody's going to say uncle at some point and actually do it. And they're going to start raising prices. And I own those companies. It's the way I look at it. I don't worry about this stuff. You know, but it seems like, you know, when you look at Wall Street and you listen to the news and you hear what people are doing on a day-to-day basis, trying to figure out what's going to happen next, where are things going to go? And they turn to people like Powell in the Fed and say, hey, what do you think? Because maybe he has a better feel for the pulse of the economy. And that's what makes it even harder because, you know, he comes out with some really great data and people go, oh, okay, so maybe we ought to be paying a little bit less for stocks in the short. Oh, maybe we ought to be paying a little bit more. You know, people are selling it, going, hey, maybe I need to accept more money for my stocks because of the news that comes out. And even statements like this get built into stock prices, bam, just like that. And, you know, try to get ahead of that thing. You know, it's a tough thing. But, you know, trying to figure out this inflation thing, I think the people that are the biggest risk when it comes to inflation are people that have all their eggs in the basket of fixed income investments, and especially those with a long-term type of a situation like, you know, they have insurance companies where they have really long-term bonds. And if inflation is something other than transitory, I think that's the biggest problem. That's another reason you diversify, as I always say. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.